Don't make me go back, Tim. Don't make me go back, right? But you did me a favour this year, Tim, because you influenced me to go to America. So I'm owing you one for that.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and it was amazing. It was the most shocking experience of my life, and I've had some pretty shocking experiences, Tim, as you know.
Absolutely,
I've been shot in the Congo. I've crossed deserts and jungles that very few people, if nobody, has crossed before. But the most shocking experience I had of my life was in North America. And the irony is not lost on me, it really isn't. There I go.
So there's not a cover-up.
No, I don't think there's
anything. No, I know, that was sort of a facetious.
No, the Orang Pendek conspiracy live on Binnell with Adam Davis. No, nothing like that.
Yeah, so how did this all come about, but aside from, me inspiring it all? And now.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, building your path. If it wasn't for you, Tim, we would have all surely died.
Ah.
So you just put out the end of your interview, cut, and yes, I'm back to the music. Tim Binnell.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Binnell of America Audio, with your host, Tim Binnell.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Binnell of BinnellofAmerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. This time around on the program, we are wrapping up our annual traditions as we welcome renowned cryptozoologist and longtime friend of the program, Adam Davies, back to BOA Audio for a debriefing on his 2012 expeditions to Sumatra and the United States. Regarding the Sumatra trip, we'll discuss how the TV program Finding Bigfoot played a huge role in this year's journey. We'll learn the latest info on the ongoing quest to prove the existence of the Orang Pendek, and we'll hear about the potential for significant DNA findings that may be revealed in 2013, as well as much, much more. Then, during our lengthy conversation on Adam's American journey, he will recount the amazing happenings from the visit, which included numerous vocalizations from an unknown creature, as well as the bizarre trail cam photo of a mysterious entity which caused a massive stir in cryptozoology this past autumn. If you have not seen this photo yet, folks, we have links all over the Binnell of America show page for this conversation. You have got to take a look at this, or just punch in Adam Davies trail cam photo into Google, and you will very likely see the picture. We spend a great deal of time talking about the picture, the fallout, the really odd happenings that took place when Adam was in the United States, and how this trip changed him fundamentally as a cryptozoologist. Adam has been on the program 5 times before. Every January we have him on the show to recount his expeditions of the previous year. So longtime listeners are very familiar with Adam Davies, but I think you are going to be very surprised by Adam's perspective this year. He has changed in a profound way as a result of his visit to America. Altogether, it is akin to a reunion with an old friend at a local pub as Adam Davies returns to BOA Audio for a rollicking conversation recounting his adventures of 2012 and covering a wealth of cryptozoological topics. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Adam Davies, please allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Adam Davies has tracked so-called mysterious creatures all over the globe. His adventures include being shot at in the Congo whilst looking for the Mokele Mamembe dinosaur, and being arrested by the Mongolian army as a spy whilst hunting the fabled death worm. Adam sincerely believes that some, but not all, of these fabled creatures exist, and embarks on field research in order to substantiate this. He has also had some fantastic successes, with scientists confirming his finds as remarkable and astonishing in the case of both the Sumatran Orang Pendek and Norway's Nessie. Remarkably to date, Adam's expeditions have been entirely self-funded. He has been featured and or presented on some very enjoyable documentaries, including Russian Bigfoot on the National Geographic Channel and The Real Hobbit, as well as China's Wild Man on the History Channel's Monster Quest series. Adam is also the author of the book Extreme Expeditions from Anomalous Books, which recounts many of his adventures. He would love to pursue his passion full-time, but at present works as a civil servant in Manchester, UK. You can find out more from Adam by befriending him on Facebook. Just punch in Adam Davies. Pretty simple. You spell Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S. That'll bring him up. Just befriend him, and you'll be able to follow his many adventures searching for mysterious cryptids. Check it out. And with all that said, my friends, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on January 10th, 2013. Adam Davies, talking about his Extreme Expeditions of 2012 on BOA Audio Season 7. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 7. And as it is January, it is time once again to welcome back our good friend Adam Davies, the man behind Extreme Expeditions. This is his fifth appearance here on the program. He returns every January. We like to call it his paranormal radio base camp, where he tells us about what he's been doing in the past year and their harrowing adventures. Every year we joke that someday I'll get in shape enough to go on one of these journeys. Once again, another year has passed and I'm still in gruesome shape, so I will not be taking part in any adventures. But I hold him in tremendous regard, and really he puts his money where his mouth is, literally and figuratively, and really goes out there and does it. He goes out there and goes on these expeditions and goes to find information on these really difficult to search for cryptids. And he had two big adventures this year, so we're going to be talking about those and really digging into the Extreme Expeditions of 2012. So welcome back to the show, Adam.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's a pleasure. I love the show, so I'm really looking forward to talking to you.
I've been looking forward to it for a while as well. In the holidays, you know, it's always crazy during the holiday season, but then I know once the new year starts, I'll be talking to Adam Davies. And weirdly enough, I was looking at your Facebook page. We taped the show last year on January 10th, so we're literally one whole year since our last conversation.
Well, it's been a year. It's been a year, Tim, I can tell you.
It certainly has. It's been quite the year for you, and two big expeditions this year. Sumatra, you went back to Sumatra towards the end of the spring, and then you came here to America in the fall. So
yeah, and you influenced that actually. It was because one of the reasons I went was because over the last couple of years I've been talking about going to come to North America and doing anything around Bigfoot, and you said to me, I think last year you said to me, yeah, you've been saying that for ages, Adam, come on. So it did make me think.
Nice. See that, folks? I told you, I'm practically a part of the team here.
You are, man. You are.
So I guess we'll go chronologically here. We'll start with the Sumatra trip. Now, this was in conjunction with the TV show that most folks are familiar with. I guess talk a little bit about how it all came together, because, you know, I always find that sort of thing interesting, and then we'll get into the meat of it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, the Finding Bigfoot people contacted me, and they were interested in exploring a couple of areas, Nepal and Sumatra. And eventually they decided on Sumatra just because it was easier to get a tangible body of evidence. And I was quite glad about that because, you know, I have a special interest in the Orang Pendek. For people who don't know what that is, it's the stories go back centuries to Marco Polo's time about an alleged bipedal, for want of a better word, yeti-like creature, although it's not a yeti, a bipedal primate that lives in the jungle. And I've spent years looking for and gathering evidence about its existence, and I passionately believe in its existence and preserving its environment. So I was really pleased that they wanted to do that. And also, it was a quite a poignant time because if you recall, my tracker, my really good friend Sahara died in the September previously.
Yeah.
And we'd organized some things for his wife, some gifts and other things. So it was very important that we, you know, I went over there and saw his family. So it gave me two opportunities, A, to do some obviously very important Orang Pendek research, but also to pay my respects to his family. I know his kids. I've known them for years. So I was glad, and it was great fun making the show. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Now, what number was this for the trips? Was this your? This had to be beyond five now trips.
It was seven. It was seven, I think.
Seven.
Yeah.
Wow.
Seven trips to Sumatra. So I know loads of the people really well there. You know, it's almost like a second home. I think I've spent more time now in Sumatra than any other country other than the United Kingdom. So, yeah, I've been there enough.
So I know the Finding Bigfoot guys, they get kind of killed on the message boards and, you know, in a lot of different places, you know, for, I guess, I personally, before I even get into that, has the episode aired yet or no?
No, I think it's due to air in February, I think it's February the 17th, you have to check the US schedule, so I'm not 100% about that.
Alright.
I think it's due to show,
but,
to air then.
Okay, I'll have to, folks should look out for that then. So, but as I was saying, you know, they take a little bit of a beating here because the show is sort of, it's tweaked a little bit to be kind of comedic at times. So, I mean, what was your take on working with them and, you know, being a part of their team, I guess you could say, for that night?
Well, I think from the show I did, we spent several weeks before, the cast came, working with the producers, getting, you know, and speaking to some good eyewitnesses. So we do, you know, they did a lot of background research. They wanted the best possible place to go and look for it. And they were very professional. And when, they did arrive, you know, I got on very well with them. I liked them, as individuals, so that we had a laugh together. And I spent a lot of time, with Cliff, and I went into the jungle with Cliff Bagman. He'd never been in the jungle before.
Oh, wow.
And he did really well, I have to say. It was very hard. The first few nights when we went out, it rained so intensely that we were literally having to shout to one another under these shelters. And he coped very, very well with that. He even had some of the local food. Yeah, I said, you've got to try some. And he's like, oh, do I have to? I said, yeah, you got to try some. So he had some. And he goes, screw these chili mudfish. They taste disgusting. He got his fair share of leeches, and he did really well. And then, you know, we did, then the weather cleared, and we did some night stuff. And we, you know, I can't say what the show found because I'm not allowed to at this stage, as you appreciate, you know, that's the way these shows work.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that I've seen the episode and it's a good episode. I enjoyed it. And you know, and those guys, they did have to trek because a couple of questions I got asked by people is like, did they do trekking? Well, the answer is yes. There's nowhere flat in Sumatra, you know, it's not like Holland. You go up the mountain or you don't do anything. So they went up the mountain and you'll see some of that in the show.
Right. So they're not just like TV stars. They did the work.
They did the work, you know. I mean, I, speaking for what Cliff and I did, we did a night investigation, and we were out till maybe 1-2 in the morning. I can't remember exactly what. But then the next morning, we were up at first light, so we were up at 5:30, 6:00. We went right up the mountain that next day, and we worked during the day and at night. And we were back down again, and then Cliff was doing some other filming. They worked very, very hard when they were there. All of them did, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so you can't tell us... What can you tell us? I'm afraid to ask now, because...
Well, I can tell
you... Did you see the Orang Pendek? I thought I heard somewhere that you did see it.
I've never seen the Orang Pendek.
Okay, yeah, all right.
I would give my back teeth. You know, I've been very close to it. I talked to you last time about how I was with Dave Archer and Sahar, and they both saw it, and they were literally just a few feet ahead of me.
Yeah.
But the one thing I can say is that, you know, in terms of the next step for the Orang Pendek, there are hairs that will be analyzed by Professor Brian Sykes as part of his process, and we can talk about that later in probably, if you like, in tangent with my trip to North America as well, because there's important things to say about that. So there is tangible evidence pending. So not seeing it, but it was a really good trip, and, you know, in terms of the Finding Bigfoot crew, I know people sometimes detract from what they do, but I can say with certainty, having been to Sumatra with them, they worked hard. They interviewed the right eyewitnesses, and we went to the right locations. So they were, I mean, sure, it's a TV show, but they weren't taking it in an irreverent manner. They were trying their best while they were there, but, you know, to their own abilities.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, so that's good, because it kind of sets the record straight a little bit, because I don't know too many people that have worked with them, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and one of the things that, without giving too much away about the show, is people say, oh, sometimes are they faking it when they say, what's that? I heard that, yeah? Well, I can say, you know, having been with Cliff, there's a bit in the show where he goes, did you hear that? Yeah, and I'm filming him doing that. And you know, I heard what he heard, yeah? So it's not some stage thing that actually happened.
Okay. There you go, folks. A little glimpse behind the curtain here as to how it all goes down. So it sounds like it was a somewhat fruitful expedition. I'm on my eggshells here, dancing around this a little bit.
So no, you can ask me what you like. Yeah, it was a good expedition, and also I got the opportunity to see Tahar's family, and that was probably the most poignant moment, because first of all, his mum came out and obviously cried and hugged me, and then his wife did as well, you know, and I saw the kids and we had a chat, so I was able to remember him while I was there.
That's great.
Not just for myself, but on behalf of all the other people who've worked with him over the years and who wanted to pay their respects. So I made sure I did that as well, and we did it for all the other people. It's important to state that, who've been over the years, because he was a good guy. So, you know, and his brother's now doing a lot of the organisation. So and even as we speak, you know, John, his brother, Cliff and I have set up a project to look for around Pendant tracks, and John, his brother, recently found one only a few weeks ago, and it's very similar to the cast that I found in 2001. I don't think it's the same animal, but it shows it's the same breed of animal that are there, and, you know, the good news is about the orang pendek, we're still finding recent sightings, and, you know, very recent, in the last few months. There's been in December, there was a sighting by a farmer of the orang pendek. I've seen photographs of its prints, and I could see that it was eating corn. So it's still active out
nice.
Right now.
So we're getting closer here to this thing. We're getting closer.
Yeah,
I like that you seem to have a sort of a ground crew there that Sahara's brother, you know, they're still doing stuff down there. It's good that that's going on now.
Yeah, they're doing stuff as we speak. And, you know, I'm waiting for reports as we speak about potential new sightings. And John's working on those right now. So the good news for the orang pendek is there is current, recent, tangible evidence coming out of Sumatra about the orang pendek right now.
Now, are there others who go down there and do these expeditions, or are you guys kind of like the only people who are going down there? I mean, because when you guys get down, it's like a big event, you know? It's like this.
Well,
I
think there are other
thing.
People who go to the area, certainly, and, you know, anybody can go to the area. I think it's important for me to say that. I think the differential is probably we spend time in a concentrated area doing those things, whereas people might just pop in and out.
But, yeah.
And because I've been so many times, I'm able to work with exactly the right people and exactly the right locations, because I've got that experience.
Right, you get it down.
And
now,
that's been learned over many years, as you know. It's not something that you just tip up and do. And you know, you have to work with the Sumatrans and understand what their strengths and weaknesses are. So they'll wait for you to do something sometimes. So they'll wait for instruction, and they need you to tell them what to do in that sense. That's just the way they operate. But you learn that, again, by being with them and seeing how they work. So I suppose from experience, I'm good at getting the best out of them as well.
Well, like you said, you've been there like 7 times now, so of course you kind of have all the little routines down pat at this point. Now, I think I asked you this before, but what's the take of the Sumatran government on the orang pendek? Are they accepting of this? Are they sort of like, yeah, we know that we have this thing here that people want to find, and you know, what's their, or are they just sort of hush hush about it? You know, what's their perspective on it?
I think that, you know, I think the Sumatrans generally would like the Orang Pandek to exist. I don't think they're anti. They've never been anti anybody looking for it. I've never had any problems with any of the officials getting permits and things like that to go there. I spoke to the governor of the province once about it, and he was supportive. You know, the Sumatrans are doing a tough job. The rangers there, they're working under a lot of pressure because there's obviously lots of people who would quite happily rip down their forests illegally.
Yeah.
So they're certainly not hostile to it. I don't think the Indonesian government as a whole would recognise it. It would be a massive leap to do unless there was really substantive scientific evidence in the same way as the US government would be, say, about Bigfoot, you know,
right.
The same thing. But they certainly don't oppose it, and they've never discouraged me from looking for it.
All right, that's good. Yeah, that's good. So there's not a cover-up?
No, I don't think there's
anything. No, I know. That was sort of a facetious.
No, yeah. The Orang Pendek conspiracy live on Binnell with Adam Davis. No, nothing like that.
Are there any plans to return on the horizon, or is this something that always... It seems like every time we talk every year, it's like, well, I may go back, and then, you know, come around April or May, I hear that you're on your way, so...
Yeah, and we had that conversation last time, and I said to you, don't make me go back, Tim, don't make me go back, right? But you did me a favor this year, Tim, because you influenced me to go to America, so I'm owing you one for that. With Smart, I always think I'm never going to go back, and as you rightly say, something happens to make me go back. So never say never. It's not my focus right now for reasons that I'm sure we'll come on to later in the show. But I am, you know, as I say, Cliff and I struck up a really good friendship when we were out in Sumatra. And, you know, right now we're working with guys on the ground to get the best evidence we can and see what happens. So I'm getting that information as we speak. You know, and if something came along that was absolutely massive, then yeah, I'm sure it would persuade me to go back at some point, but
yeah.
Not just yet, hopefully.
Now, do you think, we said here that you haven't seen it yet. Do you think if you saw it, it would change your perspective on things? Like maybe you'd be going back there all the time, or maybe you'd never go back again. Maybe you'd be like, oh, I've seen it. It's, you know. Like, well,
yeah,
how do you think you'd react to that?
Seen it, done it, read the book. No. I don't know. I think that's a really good question. I think I've always wanted to see it. And, you know, I think we could get DNA evidence of it this year. I've always wanted to see it, but I think you have to be realistic and say, well, how likely is it to see it when they're so rare that, you know, when the villagers see it, they throw a party. It's, you know, it's about unusual.
Oh, wow.
I'm going for a few weeks every year in hopeful anticipation. How likely is that? I think you have to be realistic. But you never know. I mean, I've spent years researching the best places. If I'm there on the ground, I'm good at tracking it. It's just a chance. But I didn't want it to be, I mean, as I said to you, one of the reasons I've done expeditions all over the world is I didn't want to become obsessed with just one creature and just spend my whole time looking for that. And you know, to be disappointed, you know, when I'm an
right.
old man, I never saw that bloody thing, and here I am, you know. I never wanted to be like that. So that's why I've always gone and done other things as well as look for the Orang Pendek. But it's what I'm fully aware that it's what I'm often most associated with. And I've enjoyed being in that jungle. You know, as we're trekking through the jungle, I heard a sun bear hooting. You know, tigers were around. You know, you can see amazing sea eagles drop onto the lake. And the whole place just looks like Jurassic Park around the volcano. It's awesome. It's an amazingly beautiful place, and it is attractive. I just wish that the food was a damn sight better for my personal preferences. So, but you can't have everything in this world, can you? You know.
Right. Now you You've done the DNA testing before, though, so this is additional DNA testing that what to match it up with the other stuff, or just to get more information. How does that all work?
Well, I think this is DNA testing with a more substantive sample.
Okay.
And also, when I was I spent some time. I went over to see Professor Brian Sykes from Oxford, who's the world's leading geneticist.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book The Seven Daughters of Eve, which was an international bestseller. And it was when he was starting to kick off his project, which a lot of people know about getting all these different hairs from different alleged hominids and doing the testing. And we had a good time, you know. I stayed over at Oxford and had some drinks with him and his son and his girlfriend, and he's a nice guy. And we talked at length about how that might work. And I trust him. His maxim is a maxim which I understand, which is extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if we were talking about a new species of frog or something, we would have already proved it by now, because that's what you need. But with something like this, because it's so fundamental and so different in what we know and understand about species, then you need that extraordinary proof. And Sykes is a very careful guy. He's the best in his field, and he's also got he's also looked at data from other researchers like De Sotelo, who've done tests before. And he'll either about the Orang Pendek and about one of the other samples, which I'll talk about later, he'll either say it's yay or he'll say it's nay. But, you know, from my point of view, it's not an ego thing, in the sense that if you ask me what I'd rather prove, the DNA or see, or have a photograph of it to and see it, I'd go for the DNA a million times over, because that's what will really push the fold.
Yeah.
The best research is, I'm not a scientist, as you know, and I've said that many times on your show before, but the best researchers like me who spend their time and money on this can hope for is to get DNA. To get DNA evidence, that's the thing that will really change fundamentals. So, and you know, if I get a photograph, well, it might interest Joe Public, but it's not going to shake up the scientific world. There'll always be people say, oh, well, it's this, it's that, it's whatever, you know?
Right.
If I see it, people will say, well, that's an interesting story, but he could be bullshitting, or he could be simply a case of mistaken identity, because he wants to see something. You know, but with the DNA, and if it's proved by the world's leading geneticist, that will really change things, and it will move the scientific argument on so much. That's much more important than any vainglorious thing about seeing it. I don't give a stuff, and I also don't care where the samples come from. Of course, you know, from my own research, I'd love Sykes to pull DNA off from anything that I've found, but if he finds it, if Bob or Betty Sue or Pete or whoever it is, and it's their sample, and then they get the DNA from it, then fantastic. That's what we want. There will always be scientists, there will always be people who say, habeas corpus, show me the body. But
right.
The best I can do is get the DNA, or the best amateur researchers can do is get the DNA. And that's where we are with it. That's the aspiration.
And then ideally, what is this DNA? See, I'm not really as well versed in the science. So I guess for the layperson, ideally this DNA what? Says that we were dealing with an unknown primate that
yeah,
doesn't match
I mean,
any other DNAs of any other primates that we know of, right?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, there'd have to be some cross-referencing, and I'm no geneticist, Tim, but if he publishes a paper which says, well, look, based on getting the mitochondrial DNA, based on this, I've come to the conclusion that this is an unknown species of some description, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what he'll say, or even if he will say that, but if he does that and he's prepared to stick his neck out to such a degree with that maxim, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof, then that'll be hugely significant.
Absolutely, yeah. All right, so that's kind of what we have to look forward to.
What we hope for. And that is doesn't just apply to the Orang Pendek.
Hmm.
It applies to any of the other potential hominid cryptids that he's testing. That's why I think that this year will be potentially hugely significant, one way or the other. The coin can only fall heads or tails, you know.
Yeah.
It can't go any other way. Inconclusive, frankly, is just a negative. It has to be a positive, or you know. And if it's a positive, then that's fantastic.
And I presume there's all this talk, and we joked about the cover-up aspect of it, but there's always sort of this talk that you know, the academia, they don't want to get mixed up in all this, but he's willing, if all the genes align right, if you will, you know, to butcher a metaphor, he's willing to back it up, I guess, right?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked me. You know, it wasn't. You know, when I went down, it wasn't simple. Send your sample in the post. You know, I spent some time talking to him. I stayed over at Oxford and we chatted about it. So,
nice.
You know, I've met the guy. I've spent some time with him, and I'm fully convinced that, you know, if he finds something that's substantial, he will say so. By the same token, if he doesn't, he'll say that too. But I don't think he will in any way try to negate it. And so I don't think if he finds something, he'll say, oh, well, let's cover this up, because he's already stuck his reputation out, and that's good. You know, and we've seen that gradual progression. I told you when we first found the orang pendek hairs and sent them off to Hans Brunner, the guy who was involved in the dingo baby case. So his research was good enough for the Australian homicide police. He was challenged by other scientists saying, you know, what are you doing this sort of research for? And he said, because I want to push the boundaries of science. So it's great that more respected scientists, certainly in the time when I've been doing this field, when I've been in cryptozoology, are interested in looking at this, you know. And I've now worked with primatologists from Cambridge, paleontologists from America, geneticists from America, Denmark, you know, Switzerland, you name it. So there's a field now. It's still a small field, but there's a widening field, in my opinion, of scientists who are prepared to look at it, least look at it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's critical, you know. And it seems like the orang pendek, for better or for worse, does not have the giggle factor that's associated with Bigfoot.
No, so it doesn't. I mean,
it's kind of a fresh palate, if you will.
Yeah, and people are enormously wary about Bigfoot. And when we come on to the Bigfoot story, I'll tell you my own thoughts about that. But with the orang pendek, it doesn't have that, you know, as you put it, it doesn't have that, oh, is it, is that whiff of potential bull about it. So scientists were always keener to look at that, I think, in the first instance. But, you know, people are starting to turn their attention, or have turned their attention in the last year or two, to Bigfoot too.
Speaking of which, you've turned your attention to Bigfoot. You journeyed here to America. I didn't see you, though. We did not cross paths. It's a big country, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was on the other side. I was in the Pacific Northwest. I was nowhere near Boston. I did spend a couple of days in New York on the way back, but that was a sort of chill out at the end of the trip.
Yeah, you were drinking the whole time. I wouldn't even have found
it. I was drinking some of the time. I saw the Statue of Liberty, and then I was drinking.
Good man, good man. Now I definitely know we have to meet up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm going to be back in America probably quite a bit more, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, so how did this all come about, aside from, you know, me inspiring it all?
Yeah, there you go. There you go, building your pile. If it wasn't for you, Tim, we would have all surely died.
Oh.
So you put that at the end of your interview, cut, and yes, I'm back to the music, Tim Bennell. The way it came about was, I had a bit of an interest in Bigfoot since I was a kid, but I hadn't really done anything about it, as you know. I wanted to look for Yeren in China. I was really interested in the Yeren because the stories about it, the Chinese wild man, go back 6 BC, you know, the woodcuts and stuff like that. So I was very interested in that. And there was a sighting, and it was while I'd just done a Monster Quest show. So I spoke to the, emailed the producer, Doug Hychek, and I said, you know, I'd really like to do a Yeren show, you know, is there any chance? And he said, yeah, go for it, you know, after we'd done some background research. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like, yeah, you can do what you want, Adam. He was like, yeah, okay, if there's something substantive to it, then yeah. And I was teamed up with Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and we spent some time together, obviously, because we were doing the show. And while we were doing the show, I asked him about Bigfoot, and he had a laptop with him, and he showed me some of the takes of the Patterson-Gimlin footage, you know, and he went through it frame by frame, and he explained to me why he felt it was genuine. And so I was very interested in that. And then I on and off spoke to researchers. But When I spoke to them, you know, I'll give you an example. I spoke to Matthew Johnson, Dr. Matthew Johnson, and about his Bigfoot encounter. I spoke to a few of the others, but that really stuck in my mind because the mantra I kept getting from people was Bigfoot you don't come to Bigfoot, Bigfoot comes to you. Yeah. So you know the methodology I've used. It's logical. What I do is I'll research an area, I'll decide whether the cryptid's plausible, I'll then cross-reference that with the greatest number of recent sightings, I'll pick the best local guides I have, I'll bring some camera traps and other equipment, I'm a good tracker, I hope, and I'll try my best when I'm out there, yeah? So, very simply, that's the methodology I use, but if I was going to look for something in North America, you know, I may have to change my approach fairly radically. So I had a good think about it, and one of the researchers I contacted was Laurie Simmons. Now, I'd read her dad's book. Her dad had spent 28 years in the area where there were the highest concentrations of sightings, as far as I can understand it, in North America, the Pacific Northwest. And I spoke to Laurie more and more. I think I spoke to her for nearly a year every week, and we emailed one another, and we FaceTimed one another. And we developed a friendship, and that was good. And, you know, I asked Laurie if I could come out to her area, and she said yes. So we put together a team, you know, Andy, who will talk about more because she wants to know about his eye, Sandy, and, you know, Tim, and new starters, who else was there, Simon and Jackie, and Dave Archer, who'd been there before. So we put together a team, and you know, and they had different views about the existence of Bigfoot. Some of them were very skeptical about it. But I was interested in getting this team together, and, you know, we called it Extreme Expeditions, and, you know, because we'd done a number of the other trips and go out there and do that. And, you know, I'm just speaking about how I felt. I thought it was going to be a fairly easy gig. I had very low expectations about what might happen. Not because of not believing in Laurie and her dad's research. I did, but I just thought, well, it's my first trip out here.
Right.
I'm really just going to go and learn on the first occasion and see what I can gather and maybe go to different places. And, you know, this might be the start of a project I do over many years where I go intermittently and, you know, refine my research in the same way as I did, as you know, Tim, with the Orang Pendek.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
You get better and better at looking for these things. So we went up to Laurie's research area, and Laurie said that she had a relationship with these creatures in this particular area of the North Cascades. And she said, well, you know, they live in this particular area, I'll take you to them. And she's been putting out food for them and different things over the last few years. And I went over. Now, I'd heard from various other researchers about things like tree knocking and things like that from the Bigfoot or the creatures generally exhibit, but I'd never actually obviously heard it for myself.
Yeah.
So we went to the area where this supposed creature was, and Laurie calls out, you know, are you there? And I thought, well, this is either going to go one or two ways. Either she's delusional or something's going to happen, you know. I was like, you know, I don't mind saying, oh, shit, this is freaky. What's going to go on here, you know? It was like Scooby-Doo meets cryptozoology, you know. It was like so weird. Anyway, so she calls out, but, you know, it was like came this boom, 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 boom. From these trees, these booming sounds, yeah?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what's that? Yeah, what's that? And you know, I spoke to Laurie about this. I spent 7 years cross-examining people in court. Nobody can say with any veracity that they can always spot a liar. But I'm pretty damn good at spotting a liar, and I didn't believe Laurie was lying to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I watched her feet and movements and everything else, and I didn't think she was faking it at all. But you still want to say, well, could it be another animal? You know, what is it? And Laurie then proceeded to play with something that she called the bump game, so she'd bump several times, and the thing would answer her back with, you know, the same type of bumps, you know. It was pretty astounding. Yeah, I remember coming back and telling the others, and they were like, really, you know? And it was difficult. It's difficult to swallow, so I can understand people being skeptical about it, but it was difficult for us to swallow. Do you know what I mean? It's
right, like, right.
What's this? So, and I had already built up a good friendship with Laurie, and you know, I believed in Laurie, and I'll say at the end of it, I believed in her dad's research, and I'll give you a synopsis in a minute. But it was still difficult to take on board, but I was the first person up there. Anyway, we go back, and that night, Dave and Simon, I think they went to investigate, some rocks being thrown in the water and some other noises that they heard, yeah?
Yeah.
And that was on the first night. On the second night, Laurie suggested to me, well, why don't you and I sleep out by the campfire? And we'll see what happens. You know, we've got nothing to lose. I thought, fair enough. And everybody else went to their tents, and we slept by the campfire. And, you know, eventually we went to sleep. And we set up a couple of camera traps. Most of the camera traps we set up were in the area where Laurie said she'd had the... Where the creatures were.
Right.
But we just set up two, just on an off chance. You know, the expectation was low. It was kind of, well, what I got to lose? I'm either going to sleep in my tent or I'm going to sleep by the campfire. I might as well just sleep by the campfire and see what happens. It's no loss, is it? You know?
Exactly.
And that was the approach. And that was very definitely the approach, because the next morning when we get up, we didn't rush off to check the camera traps. We sort of had breakfast, you know, had a coffee, and we just sort of checked them lackadaisically. And when we did, we were shocked by what we saw on the camera trap. And we can debate this later, I'm sure, but let me just tell you the whole of the story, and then I'm sure you'll ask me questions. But, you know, when I looked at the trap, I could clearly see an image of the creature, and it was right over us. I can see a furrow down the middle of its back. I can see musculature, and we were all shocked by the image, absolutely shocked. Laurie was... wanted to go home at that point. I remember looking at her, and she was looking at it through her fingers because she was scared.
Yeah? Oh, wow.
I had to persuade her to stay because she was for going home. And we were all really, really surprised by it. And to go on about other things that happened, we had repeated tree knocking. We had growls. I mean, some really loud growls. It's quite quick-tempered, that thing. I'll tell you about it more in a second. But we had all sorts of things happen over the period of time we were there. You know, and if somebody was trying to figure out, we're damn good trackers, we pick up humans. But B, it would have taken a Hollywood budget of thousands and a cast of many, because it was day and night, it was happening quite frequently. And it seemed to respond to, specifically to Laurie. And it was amazing. It was the most shocking experience of my life. And I've had some pretty shocking experiences, Tim, as you know.
Absolutely,
I've been shot in the Congo. I've crossed deserts and jungles that very few people, if nobody, has crossed before. But the most shocking experience I had of my life was in North America. And the irony is not lost on me, it really isn't. There I go. So it was truly amazing. And it seems to express preferences. So in other words, you know, Laurie had said it expressed a preference for a particular type of apple, and I saw that because it would take these types of apple and then it would leave other ones out. For example, we left chocolate out, and it left both British and American chocolate, which are made in slightly different ways with that. But it would take the American chocolate first, and then eventually it would go for the other stuff. And it was so astounding. It really is. And, you know, when I said it was quick-tempered when we were leaving, we were going to take some of its foodstuffs away, because we were going and we didn't want anyone to find the area or stumble across it accidentally. It went ballistic. It was...
Oh, boy.
Do you know what I mean? It was like... It was proper going for it, you know? It's not some gentle avatar-type creature, I'll tell you. It's a wild animal in that way.
So while it's making all this noises and stuff, how far away are you guys from where you think it might have been?
Well, obviously it came into camp at that point.
Yeah, aside from the
you mean how far are we physically from it? Oh, right by it, yeah. No. Right by it. You know, the noises seem to be coming from underneath, you know, to me, from the ground, yeah?
No.
From some sort of den area. How that happened, I do not know, because we spent some time looking for an entrance to a den and we couldn't find one. So how it worked, I don't know. I mean, there'll be a lot of I don't knows about that whole situation, but I'm telling you as it is, and I'm only going to tell you exactly what happened.
Right.
That is exactly what happened. And you know, so, the other thing I'd say about it is, because it's always been important for me to say that any evidence we find is analysed scientifically by experts. Laurie's dad's dying wish was that his research would be carried on by Laurie. That was what motivated Laurie to do it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Laurie's very sincere in her research. Her dad had some hairs in 2010, which he felt would probably come from the creature or Bigfoot, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I sent them off to Sykes to be analysed. Yeah. So.
Oh, nice.
You know, again, that'll either go one way or the other. I really hope that for his sake, that they get the DNA off those. It's important for us to say it wasn't as a result of our expedition, of the Extreme Expeditions expedition. It was her dad and her dad's research. But I would just love it if the DNA came off that. Of any sample, because that would be a really nice testimony to him. He's such a well-respected guy. When we went up in that area, everyone was going, you know, as soon as Laurie mentioned her dad, everyone was going, you know, oh yeah, I knew your dad, you know, great guy and everything. And it would be an amazing legacy for him. So if anything comes out of that expedition indirectly, it would be that Laurie and her dad get the recognition off that they deserve. Because of that, I had an amazing time.
So is this location, like, is it secret? Because you'd think that there'd be all kinds of people up there trying to,
I can't reveal exactly where it is, because that would be for Laurie to do.
Right.
It's her area.
Yeah.
All I can say is it's in the North Cascades, and if Laurie wants to reveal any more information about it, then she's free to do so. But it's not, I don't think it's right for me to say.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't trying to, like, get you.
No, absolutely. I know what you were saying. Yeah, you were asking, well, could people roam around and find it very easily? And the answer is, I don't think they could find it very easily. They can certainly find the area pretty easily, but the exact spot, no. I don't think they could find it very easily, no.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know the Bigfoot community. It's like, if they smell a scent, they're all over the thing.
Yeah, and I understand that. I don't fully understand the Bigfoot community, yeah, I've got to say. It's quite complicated.
Well, that's a good transition, I guess, because this trail cam thing, this turned into a huge, to-do. This was it wasn't just like you came back with this amazing footage or photo and everyone was like, oh, nice job, Adam. It was like, all of a sudden you were like in the crosshairs a little bit here.
If it had been a Orang Pendek, that's exactly what they would have said. The irony is because it's Bigfoot. Or
right.
In this case, I'm going to call it creature because I don't know it's Bigfoot. I just know it's a creature, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pin the Bigfoot label to it because there'll be a more hoo-ha.
So
I've been very careful to call it a creature because I don't know what it is, yeah. So I don't know what the creature was on the trail cam. But I do know it, you know, there was a creature there, and, you know, I do know that, yeah, and we got loads of, some of it I didn't mind, in the sense that I didn't mind, and I have no problem at all with people saying to me, people came out with all sorts of stuff, and I don't mind that. It's a man in a sleeping bag, or whatever else, or it's a werewolf, somebody said, or, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't. There was only Laurie and I by the fire, and I do smoke, as you know, Tim, but I've never in my life smoked in a sleeping bag. I certainly wouldn't hunch myself up so the sleeping bag was right over the top of my head and then have a cigarette.
Right, exactly.
It seems totally bizarre, yeah.
It's a good way to ruin your sleeping
bag. And, you know, you can see the fur and the musculature on the back, but people are always going to argue about a photograph, so I don't mind that. But some of the bullshit around it was ridiculously vitriolic. And that wasn't needed.
Right.
I mean, you can say somebody's wrong in all sorts of different ways. You don't need to call them a douchebag or whatever in order to do it. Just say, yeah, well, I don't agree, man. This is my opinion, and I'm cool with that. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And there's ways of going about that, and I'd never do that. I'd never say that about anybody else's research. So, no, I'm quite happy to debate the point. They're just right and wrong ways about going about these things, yeah?
Well, it's a very interesting picture. Why you obviously know more about these trail cams than I do. How come we don't have any more substantial footage? It's only like a brief snippet. How do these things work where you only got this little tiny bit of stuff?
Let me say, I don't know more about trail cams than most people, right? Somebody said to me, oh, you're a world-renowned trail cam expert. I'm not, right? the others laugh because I can just about switch them on. I'm like, I'm much more happy with tribal people in the jungle,
yeah.
than I am with technology. I mean, they laugh because I call the computer the singing box, yeah? So I'm not technologically minded. One of the other guys set the camera traps up, but somebody else, so this isn't in my area of expertise, Tim, but somebody else put up on our website that they'd looked into how the camera traps worked, and the camera traps had defaulted to their factory setting,
yeah.
and that was something that had happened with this particular type of camera trap, and that was why we'd only got the short image. And it was an independent group of researchers. We didn't ask them to do it. It just dropped into our email box one day, and I was like, great, thank you very much, you know. So they answered that question, I think. And I think as well, a couple of other researchers, people like Damien Bravo, had spent a lot of time looking at the sizes of the image and seeing how big it was, which I was particularly interested in. Because from my point of view, just from a purely academic point of view, and this is a really important point because I want you to understand the mindset here for me mm-hmm. now. Just me thinking about it. Now, I have been in the jungle on a number of occasions. I've slept in the desert, etc. I'm used to sleeping in areas where there are wild animals, but that thing had got right up to me and Laurie, and had loomed over me, and it's personally quite disturbing, and I'm not joking when I say this.
Mm.
It's personally quite disturbing, and not a day goes by when I don't think about that and think what it was doing and what its motivation was. So I just as a personal point of view, forget the science, forget everything else and all the other motivation there. I'm really interested in learning about what it is, how big it is, and what it was doing, yeah?
Right.
On a basic level. That's what I'm most interested in that sense, yeah? And so, you know, when people have done analysis of its size and have speculated what it might be in terms of its behavior, that's what I've been most interested in. So other people did analysis of the film, and I was grateful for that because it's helped me understand that. So when Damien did his research, I was pleased because it sort of moved it forward for me. And I guess, you know, one of the next steps is to get the photos and images analyzed further by further professionals so we can learn more. And so where we are with the research is we'll get those photographs analyzed more. Laurie's dad's hair samples will be analyzed by the leading geneticist in the world. And I'm taking a very short trip back to the North Cascades in about 4 or 5 weeks' time. I'm predominantly going to see Laurie, but I'm also going to spend a night or two up in that area and see if I can get lucky again.
Now, the next day after this thing happened, did you guys notice, was anything askew in the camp where it was like, oh, I think something came through here last night, or was this completely like, it just, you know, then you, you know, or was it like you just saw it on the trail cam footage and you were like, what the hell was that?
On trail cam. I mean, we weren't looking for it at all. I mean, we got up and did our normal routine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We weren't looking for anything. We just mooched about. We had breakfast. This is off the top of my head, so I can't be sure about this. But I don't think it was till gone 10 o'clock when we looked at it. I mean, we were just thinking about moving off and doing our thing, you know, going to different areas. It was really lackadaisical. We were just literally having a coffee, and we just thought we'd have a quick check just in case.
Yeah, so it wasn't like you guys woke up and you were like, oh my God, what the hell happened, all of a sudden.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And you can see that on the trail photos, because I think the image of the creature is on one of them. You see the fire go, you see, Laurie and I go to sleep. The others have gone to bed by this stage. Laurie and I go to sleep by the campfire. You see the campfire goes down, so it seems to wait until the campfire's gone down before it comes in. Or, you know, because we're fast asleep. And then later on, Laurie woke me up to go to the bathroom, because obviously they're outside of the camp and we have to go to a block to do that. And we had no idea, because it was the next morning, when we actually saw the evidence. But at that particular time, we had absolutely no clue at all. And you can see that, because I come back from the shower block with the toilet with Laurie, and there's no, you know, we had no clue.
No clue
at all. It was a big shock. And it was a big shock in the context of the fact that all this stuff was going on as well, because it wasn't just the first day and night. Everybody had their own experiences, as I say, and there was knocking and growling and all sorts of things going on. Throughout that time, it was remarkable, you know.
Exactly. Remarkable. Yeah, it wasn't just the one.
No, it wasn't just one thing. It happened a lot, you know. And I was conscious of the fact that, you know, a lot of researchers who aren't from North America, one of the things that they're a bit conscious of is not coming to North America, because they're worried about all the shit they might get if they get involved in the Bigfoot stuff.
Right, right.
You know, and people have said that to me after I came back as well. They've said, you know, you're going to get a load of shit, or you have got a lot of shit, but this, Tim, is the truth. This is how it is. And you know, I've always been prepared to freely share my research and ask people what they think. There's no motivation in it other than curiosity in that sense. There's no money in it. There's nothing. There's no benefit for me, you know what I mean?
Exactly,
in that sense. All I get is potential flack, but the one benefit is the benefit that I've alluded to earlier, which is curiosity and understanding about the creature. I'm fascinated by that. And I will think about it. I know that I will think about it till the day I die. I mean, that trip and that night will be etched in my memory till I die. No doubt.
It's a pretty strange, I'm looking at the picture now. I mean, it is pretty strange. It's hard to really wrap your mind around what exactly that thing is.
Yeah, it's very, very strange, you know. And if you look at it now, I haven't got it in front of me now, but I can see it in my head.
Right, right.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and we'll have links up on the show page here for folks to take a look at.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I can see, you know, that the point of its head. I can see what appears to be its elbows. I can see a musculature.
Hmm.
I can see the most distinctive feature. I think that one of the most persuasive features is the big furrow down the middle of its back. Yeah, so
yeah,
you can see that as you look at it. I'm sure it'll be analysed to death, and that's good. I mean, that's the right way to go about it. And people will have different opinions, and that's good. And that's the right way to go about it, yeah?
Exactly.
So I'm totally cool with that. Don't think for a minute that I don't think, I don't respect people who would say I have a different opinion to you, because I do.
Exactly, yeah. Well, it was surprising to me when all this went down, because it was like, I know you relatively, you know. I mean, we've talked many, many times. So it was like, oh my God, what? How is Adam mixed up in all this crazy debate here? And you know, personally, I know you well enough, I know you well enough to say, you know, you're not going to be out passing off fake bullshit crap that you made on your computer, like, just to get people, you know.
Well, first of all, I mean, why would I need to do that, Tim? Really,
Yeah,
I've been all over the world. If I was of a mindset that I'd want to fake something, and you know my attitude towards hoaxing has always been, I just think it's ridiculous, because I've said so many years before this came up. But I could have faked bullshit in the Congo or something like that. You know, I've been to the swamp where no one else has been before. If I didn't make some shit up, I could have done anything there, couldn't I? I'm hardly going to go and do it in a campsite in the US, am I? I mean, if I was going to bullshit, I've had years of opportunity to do that in much better places to do it than America, you know?
Exactly.
So I'm never going to do it there. So the idea that I would, well, you know, it's just, it's daft. And I wouldn't do that because I look at all the research and how hard I've worked for so many years about the Orang Pendek and gathering all that evidence, you know. And I wouldn't want that to be negated because I wanted to get some cheap shot of a few Bigfooters debating some potential fake. No, I'd never do that.
Right.
I'd never fake anything. And you know, and that was on the back of Laurie's dad's 28 years of research. He just died of cancer. So, you know, people might criticise Laurie, but I mean, at the end of the day, she's not going to go and fake her own dad's research.
Exactly.
And destroy his legacy just for a picture in the internet. The whole idea, the idea of that is you know, I can only speak for myself, and the idea of me doing that and wasting all those really hard years of research on things like the Orang Pendek it wouldn't make sense.
Right, right. So at the end of the day, though, do you think this was what, you don't want to go all the way with the Bigfoot thing, but I mean, it does seem like some kind of weird creature. I mean, it doesn't seem
to look
like any, it's not something you can easily dismiss and be like, well, that's just a deer, you're seeing it wrong, or a bear or something like that.
I mean, that's the thing, and it displays, it doesn't display any sophisticated, it doesn't have any tool use as far as I can see, or fire or anything like that, but it displays a sentience, it displays food preferences, and it displays a personality. And it certainly is able to interact with you on some sort of level. You know, classic primate activity is a tree knocking, as I'm sure you know. And so exactly what it is, I don't know, but I do know it's around. I'm sure of that, yeah?
Yeah?
I'm fascinated by it, you know? I'm absolutely fascinated. And, you know, my focus now, I've had some thoughts about it, has completely turned to North America because of it, and Canada. I'm completely fascinated by it. I was always a little bit interested in the Bigfoot stuff, but after that, I am amazed and interested in exploring more of it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like what I asked you about the Orang Pendek. It's like this has sort of lit a fire in you now to go back.
Oh,
now,
it's totally lit a fire. I mean, when you've had an experience like that, because of the fact that it's been on top, you know, almost on top of me, literally, and because I heard all that knocking, and because I've heard its growl, because I've seen it take food, I've had that unique experience. It's really gripped my imagination and interest. I mean, as it would, who wouldn't it, you know? If I lived in North America, I would be out in the woods all the damn time now. I'd be like the Robinson Crusoe of North America. I have a tree bark shirt. That would be it. After that, I'd be there. You know, I live in Britain. I have to travel thousands of miles for this shit, you know? It's like, oh, if it was on my doorstep, I would be, I'd be Grizzly Adams. I'd be catching fish with my teeth.
Well, that actually brings up a whole different point, but something that I don't think we've ever talked about here on the show. We may have, actually, because, like I said, this is the fifth time you've been on, but we may circle around on some stuff.
There was once a great American named George Henderson. He met a woodland ape, or Sasquatch, and despite its dangerous message of environmentalism, became his friend. But when the time came to do the hard thing and send it back into the forest where it belonged, and birds could perch on its shoulder because it was gentle, George Henderson summoned the strength, and by God, he did it. Did it hurt? You bet it hurt. Like a bastard. But he did it because it was the right thing to do. For the woodland ape. You think about that.
What?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Is that Harry and the Hendersons?
You've seen it.